kind of like how we do informal. Well,
I don't think it will.
Each case should stand on its own facts.
Okay.
So
in the case of 2506, I mean, I think the biggest issue that I have is the fact that the verbal estimate was given and was not documented in the record. I think it really doesn't play into what happened in this case, and I really don't even believe it's at the crux of what this owner is concerned about, and really I understand why he's concerned, and I understand him going through and trying to find everything, because he was angry, and he was in a bad situation, so I understand that, but I don't actually think it played into the care that this cat got. So if anything, I would say on the estimate, it would be a letter of concern, just making sure that you're documenting in the record any verbal estimates or treatments or anything else that you're doing.
Is that a motion?
You can make that motion.
I can make that a motion. So I would find, in the case of 2506, no violations of our Practice Act of Rules, but issue a letter of concern just to be sure that we're documenting anything that is verbally said to make sure that we have a written account of it.
Second.
Okay, so motion and second on case 2506. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, 2507.
All right. Madam Chair,
yes.
Can I jump in? Can I ask that specifically towards estimates? Written estimates? Or
yes,
verbal
or written documented in the medical record.
Tracy, I did the motion based on what the situation here was, that the estimate was given verbally and not documented. But I would say that about anything we say verbally, and key points in what goes on in an exam should be documented so that they protect themselves in the future. That's
right,
my letter of concern.
That's best practice.
Yes.
That's different than...
But what this was about was the estimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just...
Can I?
Yes. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the board, so the rule that you're talking about, R311-502C, does not require anybody to document in the record. When you look at other rules throughout the administrative code, there are some that do call out that it does have to be required. So someone reading this rule would not know that you're expecting them to write it in the record.
Well, and that's why I didn't call it a violation, because it's not a violation, because it doesn't say in our statutes you have to do it. Why I'm saying it as a letter of concern is I don't really know if it was given or not. I don't know if a verbal estimate was given, because there's nothing in the record to say that it was, and if it didn't happen and it wasn't in the record, I can say, if I listen to the owner, that it wasn't given. So my concern is you did something verbally and now you're leaving us to sit here and try and figure out, well, was it done or not? And it's really better if you do something like that to make sure you write it down so that we don't have to judge this in the future. Like, if it didn't get into the medical record, it didn't happen. So then I could say there's a violation for not providing an estimate, because I don't know that it happened. What I'm saying is, because it's a he said, she said, and I don't know that it didn't happen, I'm doing it as a letter of concern. I don't know. Does that make it feel any different?
Mark, do you want to address, so letters of concern are meant to be, to point out that a violation could have occurred because of that?
Well, a letter of concern is to really express, you know, to the licensee that if that they don't have enough information to conclude that there's a violation of the statute, but that, you know, so you're expressing your concerns, but, you know, continued activity similar to this, if it comes back before the board in the future, it may rise to a disciplinary matter. In this case, what we're just expressing concerns, because it's, you know, I hear what you're saying. What we're trying to do is express in a letter of concern what you would like to see best practices be. And I'm not so sure that that's the appropriate.
I don't think it's best practices. I mean, best practices in the general sense of, yes, you should be documenting things. So you can take that out if that's what's creating the confusion. But my other option here is to go back and find a violation of the fact that no estimate was given to this owner. Because it wasn't in the medical record.
And
It wasn't written in the record.
Dismiss with no violation before we issue, and then issue the letter?
No.
So I'm actually advocating because I don't actually, back to what you said about letters of concern, I don't know that it rises to the level of violation because I don't actually know which way it happened. I'm concerned that a doctor would give an estimate and not document it in any way, shape, or form. But I can go back and make it a violation and say there was no estimate given because it wasn't in the record.
But it's not required to be written in the record.
Right.
So but it, but
be
right,
a violation but if it's not required
an
to be
estimate
given.
Is required to be given. And if I believe, because it goes back to what do you believe happened if it's not in the record, if I believe that no estimate was given to this owner, then it's a violation.
Well, and then maybe the letter of concern in this case is that at all times it's the professional's responsibility to make sure that they are conducting themselves in accordance with all appropriate statutes and regulations.
So we have a motion and a second. So we need to vote?
Well, yes, but are we clear on what the motion is for the issue of letter of concern?
So dismiss the case with no violations and issue a letter of concern that the doctor makes sure that they're in compliance with all rules and statutes, including providing estimates to owners.
I think we need that focus in that. Otherwise, it's so broad, it applies to every statute and rule.
So we have a motion?
Yeah, second.
And a second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, so case 2507?
So 2507 and 2508 are going to be really hard for me to pull apart because the actions in 2507 should be overseeing the actions of 2508 as the premise holder. So my concerns here as the premise holder is that we have two phone calls that I believe asked to speak to somebody about the problems. I don't understand why else they would have been calling that never got to the doctor or anyone else, not even the office manager. They happened on the 4th, there's two documented conversations and they never made it anywhere. And to me, that's a policy of the hospital. I think the other piece of 2507, and they did address it in the follow-up, is that the other owner was potentially involved in the decision to terminate a client. But I feel this client was kind of left in a little bit of a bind because they had called twice on the 4th, sent an email on the 5th, not asking for a call, but clearly stating there were some problems, and didn't get any kind of answer until the 7th, and then wasn't even told on the 7th that they were going to be terminated, and this behavior that they had been calling about continued, and they never got a resolution, and they never got to talk to anybody. And I've never been in a clinic where you fired a client because they were upset about the fact that their cats were fighting like crazy and really having trouble and they're emotional and they don't know what to do until we fire them without ever even talking to a doctor. And I do kind of have concerns about that decision being made. I think if the doctor had talked to them and this combative behavior continued, then they could have said, okay, we're not going to be able to meet you in the middle or even in work with you. But there was no communication with a doctor. All they ever got was a receptionist and no follow-up on this case. So I do feel like some of that falls on the premise holder as one of the owners of the practice.
Are they responsible for the performance of a certified veterinary technician?
Well, it was clarified that yes, she is able to make unilateral decisions, but that this, did ultimately get reviewed.
Ultimately it's the policy of the practice,
so that's,
right?
Yeah,
it's
that's
not
the
performance, it's the policy.
It's a policy.
And I have a problem with a policy that an owner calls twice and it never gets to the doctor. You put this doctor in a really bad pickle because now this doctor's like, oh crap, I'm going before the board and I never even knew that somebody had called for me. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in that situation. And so I think that's what I'm struggling in 2507, and I don't know that I have a great answer for what the violation is outside of professionally acceptable procedures. But any thoughts from other members?
Yeah.
And am I overthinking this? And should this be a letter of concern?
It's really hard to do.
So, yeah, and so was this relationship terminated without resolution of, you know, the condition or situation? That's where I'm not sure, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, they do have a right to serve who they want to serve. I don't disagree with that.
Right.
And they do have a right to terminate clients.
Were they in the middle of a...
But they don't have the right to sever the relationship until the animal has care by another veterinarian.
And I don't know that they didn't call Scaredy Cat and say, hey, we're transferring this cat back to you. Here's what's going on. I feel like that there was a little bit of a...
Yeah.
Loss there.
But accepted medical procedures doesn't really fit.
Professionally acceptable procedures.
Professionally acceptable procedures.
I guess.
We always use that in terms of...
Victoria, I saw you kind of motioning to one. Do you have a suggestion that maybe would be helpful?
It just might be helpful for us to read the rule about referrals and what's required.
No, not referral, not referral. The finishing of the care of a patient before terminating the relationship, not referral.
Well, I think that goes together, because I think I heard something that the premises would be expected to arrange for something to happen before they could be discharged. But I just
think if they're at the point where they don't feel that they can have a qualified a functional conversation with this client because of behavior or whatever, if they're truly at the point that a doctor in this clinic cannot have a conversation with an owner about an ongoing case that has never gotten a follow-up call, if they can't have that call, they own getting the information to somebody else for them to answer. And just sending the records to Scaredy Cat, I don't know if that constitutes that for me. I think the bigger issue isn't the referral back to Scaredy Cat, it's the fact that you left the client with no answer and no reason for it, and no doctor ever talked to the client. You left it to a technician, granted a certified one, or one that's probably very tenured, but one that to answer a question, and I don't think that that's... I feel like this owner was saying, I want to speak to a doctor. I've got two cats that are going at it and have been for days, and I can't function in my household. I need some help. And even if that was for the doctor to call and say, you know what, this sounds like you're having a behavioral issue and we need to get you to a behaviorist and we're going to refer you to Dr. Moffitt, great. Like, that's probably all that would have needed to happen. But there was no communication between the client and the doctor, ever. Any doctor.
But just to clarify, the referral to Dr. Moffitt and
that's
I
a separate.
Yeah, that is separate. But you brought it up as to if the referral should have been followed up by under the premise holder's responsibility, and I don't think so.
I wasn't referring to referral as in, like, we can't handle behavior, so we're going to refer to a specialist.
Okay, that's
that
would have
been Dr. Moffitt, right? That's a
yes.
different
And I know Dr. Moffitt's schedule is like a month out.
Yeah,
so.
And what I'm referring to is they terminated the client and sent the records to Scaredy Cat. And I'm assuming that means that's because that's who they thought was going to do the continuance of care.
Gotcha.
Because you have a cat that never got any rest. We don't even know if the constipation got better. Like, we don't even know if the original issue that this owner came in for was resolved.
Yeah.
So you terminated the client, but you have to give them somewhere, some kind of answer how to get care.
So we're in Dr. Patterson, correct?
Yeah, as the premise holder.
Yes.
So, okay. And so what is the concern with what she did in the handling of this, in her involvement in this matter?
I don't think she technically did anything because she wasn't involved in it, outside of the fact that as the premise holder you should be setting the practice, the policy for the practice, and clearly the policy for the practice allows clients to go without any kind of follow-up call or referral anywhere in firing those clients based on one person's interaction with them and no doctor ever being involved.
Right, so like the other case, do we know if they had a policy? Was the policy violated? We don't know these things.
Right. We only know the policy from 2020, which I don't even know if that's still a policy. So, I can't say. I can just say that I don't think it's an acceptable practice to have a client come in, be seen for a condition, and never get the opportunity to, one, see if that condition itself had resolved, and when they had complications, never get to talk to anybody ever at the practice, and then be terminated. I don't see how that should ever happen. And I don't know where that falls as far as, that's what I'm saying, is it in the ethics of the, I'm struggling a little bit, but how would you feel if you went in and spent, I don't even know how much for your cat to be treated for constipation, and then you couldn't get a hold of anybody and it wasn't getting better and it was having other complications and you couldn't do anything about it. You just wasted however much money and time you spent because you can't even get an answer.
But in this case, we had a successful treatment, right?
Well, we think so. We think so. It had complications, but you don't know that.
The client said it didn't have any problems.
Right. Yeah. We just didn't know that at the time. When he called on the 4th, I don't know if it was successful or not.
Because no doctor.
Because no one ever talked to him. I mean, unless your receptionist are making medical determinations.
Right.
So, I
just don't know where it falls. That's what I'm struggling with. It just doesn't seem like it's professionally acceptable procedures because it's the responsible vet. It's like not fulfilling the duties of the responsible vet to make sure your practice has policies in place that allow for owners to get follow-up care. I don't know where that falls.
Is it the follow-up care or the follow-up call? Or both?
They're one and the same.
Both.
Okay.
Both. I mean, do you guys disagree? Because if you guys disagree, I'm...
Oh, I don't. No, I don't disagree. But I also see your dilemma here. And we have this all the time.
Yep.
And if it had been the doctor, if it had been Dr. Osmond that just decided not to call back, I would have said that that's a different issue. But this, she wasn't even aware that they called. So this has to fall to the premise. I mean,
the decision was made for her, really.
Right.
And the premise holder, unfortunately, was never involved. I think if she had been involved, maybe this wouldn't have happened.
That's what she testified for 25
that she authorized the office manager, the CBT, to make the decision about terminating clients. That's what I understood you say. Is that
well,
correct?
And there still was the whole thing about 2 calls came in on the 4th that never got relayed to a doctor.
Okay.
And that has to go back to your clinic policy or practices. It happened. Maybe that's not their practice and somebody violated it, but I'm not seeing that. It sounds like they were okay with it.
LLC, a letter of concern?
What do you guys think on letter of concern?
That's where I think we have to find.
Yeah.
We can't find the statute that
covers
it. So.
Right.
Yeah, because the thing is it says...
But then we also have the problem that Mark said with a letter of concern. What we're saying is there's a violation, a potential violation.
Well, so if you go to R311 50117, right? A veterinarian is free to choose whom the veterinarian will serve within the limits of the law. A veterinarian who agrees to provide veterinary medical services to an animal is responsible for the welfare of the animal until the animal is released, referred, or discharged by the veterinarian, or the veterinarian is dismissed by the animal owner. And so, if you look, where does that fall? Because the animal wasn't discharged because to do a true discharge instruction, it has to be hospitalized or surgery, right?
Well, if you want to go there. Isn't discharge at the conclusion of your appointment?
Right, but is it at the conclusion of your appointment? Because if you recommended any follow-up care or things, you know what I'm saying, medications, then when
does it
end?
Is that professionally acceptable procedures to end your visit at the time that they walk out the door? And if they have questions, oh well.
Right, that's the thing, is if they have questions, is it like, no, you have to come back in again, because don't we use that as VCPR?
Find that as your violation and look careful.
Because they have to follow up until they are discharged or referred to somebody else, right? So, like, if you're discharged, you came in for vaccines, you concluded that appointment, now you're discharged.
Right, but then if they have a vaccine reaction, are you like, no, we're not going to see them again? Or is it related to that visit? And so, do you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
I think it does get a little bit fuzzy there. And so, whenever the cat seemed to directly have an issue that correlated to that visit, right, and there was calls that were made, then where do you say, like, a veterinarian needs to speak with them, right? Or you get frustrated because they're frustrated and you terminate them. Like, where is that line?
I mean, I guess I could say we could do R311-501 under the ethical standards that...
Again, I'm not digging for a violation. I just see that, like, this could get... If this behavior continues, I think you could end up with a violation because... Having a unilateral, being able to make a unilateral decision when you're not the premise license holder nor the attending veterinarian could be a problem. Personally, I would never want myself in that position, you know? And so, again, I think that if you set yourself up for somebody who's not the premise license holder or the veterinarian to be able to make a unilateral decision like that and not need to, you know, go to a veterinarian and say, hey, this person's having an issue and they're really upset, right, about this. They're very emotional about what's going on with their cat. I need you to talk to them. I feel like, you know, a veterinarian's probably going to pick up the phone and say, I need to talk to them, right? Versus making a unilateral decision saying, this person's really emotional, upset, so I'm going to terminate them because nobody should have to deal with that. But that is veterinary medicine, is dealing with people who can't talk for their pets, essentially, right? Because they don't know what's going on with them, and so they look to you, right, as a veterinarian.
But at the same time, it also says discharge or referral, right? And the referral was made to Dr. Moffitt. Now, I totally understand the frustration that it takes a month, and I personally have been in that situation with two dogs, and it took 3 months to get in.
Well,
so,
and that's the thing,
but it wasn't made until the 7th.
And maybe one of the good things that came out of COVID, right, is referrals to where maybe you can do some sort of a remote, you know what I'm saying, consult now. Yeah, maybe you could do a remote consult so that when somebody like Dr. Moffitt has, you know, booked out really far, that maybe there are alternatives, because right in person can be challenging.
And I'm not even so sure. I mean, yes, a referral was ultimately days later made
right,
to
days
Dr.
Later,
Moffitt.
Sure. Yeah.
That's not even really what I'm talking about, is kind of the follow up on this initial case and the fact that we never even had an initial conversation with the owner about what kind of behavior issue was it to even determine if it needed to go to Dr. Moffitt. Honestly, if you'd called me and you said my cats are fighting, they've been fighting since I got home from the vet, I would probably look up that condition and tell you, separate the cats and let's see if we can get some pheromones on board and let's see if we can do something to try. I wouldn't necessarily...
Speaking, you would do that as the doctor.
Right.
Correct.
But
I just wanted to clarify that you weren't speaking for the CBT or the...
Oh, yeah, yeah. As a doctor, and so I don't even know that the doctor, any doctor, even listened to the owner enough to say a referral was needed. The
or
technician
heard,
did.
Or heard the doctor, the client.
Or
right?
heard the client.
Yeah.
I mean, here's another option as a violation, and I don't know if this is a standalone, but number 19 under the responsible veterinarian for ensuring that there's policy that abides with the laws and rules of the practice of medicine, because I don't think that what happened was R311-501-1. I don't think this doctor did the inappropriate communication or courteous verbal interchange with the owner or considerate treatment or professional acceptable procedures, but that is one of our statutes that as the premise holder you're responsible for ensuring happens.
Which one, I'm sorry?
My thought was under, I don't even, it's under what the rules of the responsible veterinarian are. So I'm looking at the definition, I think, but I think it would be where it talks about the responsible veterinarian. And I'm just going off of the definition because they're responsible for the.
Right. But you have to look at 2274.
Violation of section 32, 22, 33, or any rule adopted pursuant to that section. Professional conduct.
Right, and then you tie it to your definition from professional conduct. And this is if you're finding a violation.
This is what?
If you're finding a violation.
So what do you guys think? I feel this is a violation, but I don't really know where to put it. So I'm open to going to letter of concern because I really don't know where to put
it. That's where I am. If we can't find a violation.
Right. I think a letter of concern, ultimately, you know, making sure that when clients are calling, especially repeatedly, even if they're not interpreting the client specifically asking to speak with a doctor, you know, about medical concerns about a patient, like a doctor needs to be involved. And it's really unfortunate that the policies or procedures in place completely excluded the attending veterinarian, you know,
right.
who seems to have genuinely been interested in, you know, helping, right? I mean, I don't think anybody that we talked to seemed disinterested in the patient at all. It just was unfortunate that when emotions were high, you know, everything got cut off. You know, there just wasn't an opportunity. So,
and would you consider in the letter of concern clarifying language in the medical records as far as like contact owner instead of telephone call? Like, if that seems to be an area of contention that like
oh.
it was stated that we were like, you know, the veterinarian was to call. Should we just say contact?
Yeah.
Because to
yeah.
your point, Dr. James, the new way is email and text
email,
messaging.
Text.
So just stating that they would be contacted.
I'm not clear. Not saying phone.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Just contact.
Yeah.
Phone, whatever it is.
Well, again, yeah, some clients have different preferred methods of communication.
Sure.
But again, I think it just comes down to communication, right?
Mm-hmm.
And most of our cases do. But this one.
All right. So we can do a letter of concern for not having policies in place for the practice to ensure that owners that have questions are appropriately referred back to a veterinarian to make the decision and to talk with them about their concerns.
Okay.
Okay, so that's an option, or we can go back to professionally acceptable procedures. But I just don't really know how that relates to the premise holder.
Yeah. I'll go with the former, not the latter.
Okay.
So with the letter of concern? Okay, so I'll make a motion on the letter of concern. As I stated.
Dismiss with no violation.
Dismiss with no violation. Issue a letter of concern that the premise does not have policy or it was not in effect and followed to ensure that a client with questions was able to speak to a veterinarian to help resolve the issue. Or address the issue, even if it wasn't resolved.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
So
passes. And then so then we have a case 2508.
I have one other thing.
Wait. 2507?
07.
Okay.
So and tell me if I need to go into executive session, that you might be able to answer this. I couldn't find in the rules if you terminate a client, if you can automatically send records to a clinic, to another clinic. Like,
nothing that says.
There's nothing that says you can, or nothing that says you can't, or nothing that says you should.
Yes.
Okay. Because there's no, we don't have like HIPAA or privacy acts. No, but like, because I work with a lot of boarding facilities, if I call a veterinarian's office and I say, hey, I need vaccination records for Fido, because he's boarding with me this weekend, and the veterinarian says, oh, I can't send you medical records until I get approval from the client.
Yeah, that's
that only applies if you're sending it to somebody that's a non-veterinarian?
No,
that's just the standard practice that somebody put in place.
That's an internal policy.
Okay, so let that go. Okay. All right, so now we're on to case 2508. I mean, I certainly understand that there was some frustration. You could hear it in her voice today with regards to this client and how the interactions had gone. And I can see that on the clinic side, as far as they got inundated with a bunch of claims and things. But I'm not sure it was handled to the best of the ability, although I think we kind of addressed the crux of the issue in the premise holder responsibility for ensuring that those things don't happen. Like, I don't know that that actually falls to the office manager. I feel like making sure that policies are being adhered to and things are happening the way they should falls to the premise holder. Mm-hmm. And the premise holder is responsible for making sure the office manager is doing their job.
Yeah. And Dr. But Jane, so just to you know, circle back, though, we're taking a look at her conduct as a CVT, not as the office manager.
Right. Okay. And I don't see any, she didn't work as a CVT, yeah. So I don't even know how you would apply any of that.
Well, so it doesn't really matter, like, so if you're in a, like, so for example, if you're the responsible veterinarian, even if you're not diagnosing, prognosing, performing surgery, right, et cetera, you still are a veterinarian, like, as a licensee. So as far as this case goes, she's still before us as a licensee, right? So if there's a concern, right, if there's a violation or a letter of concern or something, then we address that. But otherwise, it doesn't matter what role she was filling in the practice is ultimately what you're saying. It doesn't matter if you're a CVT functioning as a practice manager or, you know,
I just don't think any of the violations on CVTs are going to apply to what
not going to apply to CVT.
Because the duties that she was performing
we
were
don't
not
regulate
CVT
office duties.
Right.
Like, unless there's one that's like general ethics or something, I mean, I'm not aware of one, but I don't know that we've had that many, so I'm looking at it right now. I mean, but the stuff on CBTs is a lot less than what we find with veterinarians or
pharmacists. Right, so there's no concerns about, you know, diagnosing or prognosing
right.
happening, right, or unilateral, again, because prognosis, diagnosing, if you're making, like, I can't make a referral as a CBT. Does that make sense? Like, I would have to talk to a doctor to get a referral. So was the referral for Dr. Moffitt made by a veterinarian, right? And then she delivered that, or was it unilateral?
No, it was made by a technician.
We can't do that.
Do we know? Can you answer to that?
That's from the testimony. She said she goes, I answered the question, the doctor was in surgery, and I told him referral to the...
Okay. So she did make the referral.
She made the
or,
referral.
Yeah, or was the doctor in surgery and she advised it. That's.
I didn't hear that there was any advice
going
on. She
made
the decision.
The decision to make a referral. That's all I heard.
But I don't know, because like I've worked in practices where technicians have done that, where they're like, oh my gosh, we could refer you to a behaviorist. They usually would say, let me ask
let
one
me
of my doctors.
Doctor.
But yeah. Like, I, you know, under the certified veterinary technicians, I don't.
Again, there's just four things we cannot do, right?
Right, but I don't even.
And then obviously there's other ethics and things that.
Um,
But is there a concern there or not, I guess, would be the question.
Do you guys have concern with a certified veterinary technician making a referral without talking to a doctor?
I don't know if I normally would, but obviously in this case it's a little bit different because the doctor didn't have any input whatsoever. I feel like when I've been in those situations that there have been some other conversations that I have had with the technician so that they still have my input essentially on it. But at the same time, is that any different than saying you should come in?
Well, and because I don't even see referral.
Provide, right. It just says you cannot do surgery, you cannot diagnose or prognose, and you cannot prescribe drugs and medicine. Mm-hmm. So
it doesn't say anything about referral.
It doesn't say anything about a referral. Right. So like.
But why would you make a referral?
Well, but on the flip side, if somebody called your clinic and you were in a general practice and they said, "Oh my gosh, my dog's not breathing," mm-hmm. and da da da, you say, "Take him to the emergency clinic." That's a referral.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So, I mean.
Sure. But again, this patient had a veterinary-client-patient relationship there, right? So,
right, but
should a veterinarian have told them to? Again, I'm just asking. Should a veterinarian have said, yes, they need a behaviorist, or, oh, no, wait a second, I need to talk to them, because this is a referred feline aggression, let's make sure we make some recommendations that can help them out in the meantime, right? I mean, I don't know. The veterinarian didn't get to talk to them, and it was a unilateral decision,
right.
So why? And is there something that could potentially happen in the future, so this is potentially a letter of concern, right? Or is there something that did happen that's a violation, or is there not altogether? That's the only...
I don't know if there's a violation because that could have been to the example that I used, it could have been the regular general practice that the person takes them to, but if they're like, hey, you know, this is Mrs. Smith, I have Fluffy and she's not breathing, and you knew that as a CBT you answered the phone that you didn't have the capabilities of doing that, you would tell them, take them to the emergency hospital, right? You wouldn't necessarily run to the doctor, hold on, let me see if the doctor thinks that this isn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I think that's a good point, but I think it's a little bit different in that it's an emergency. This had been going on for days, and no one ever referred to a doctor. She just got it on the 7th, so in fairness, she didn't know that they'd called apparently on the 4th.
Well, I guess the long and short of it is, like, maybe it is a letter of concern, because, again, it does not fall, the four things that are listed here that a CBT cannot do, referral is not part of that.
Right. And I guess the question is, did she make a diagnosis by saying this pet needs to be referred? Did she say this pet has a condition we can't treat, so we're going to refer it?
I think it goes back to the policy under the responsible vet.
Which we've already...
We're done with that one. Right.
We've already addressed, right?
But
if they're listening, like, that would be something else under the responsible vet.
Yeah.
But I'm just struggling here because I feel like what the issues that I had were more in the office manager duty, not in the technician duty, and I feel like we already addressed the fact that this owner did not get follow-up care with the doctor.
And
that's really what my issue is.
Yeah, right. And the communication, like, do we think that the phone call was handled as best as it could have been?
No.
Probably not, just based on testimony, right? But
right.
Again, it's not a violation for what we have. So that's the hard part, because we know that it wasn't ideal.
Right. Well, and from testimony, I didn't even hear the owner get as upset as the office manager.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. But I don't think I can find a violation from office manager duties. So I'm going to make a motion in the case of 2508 that we dismiss with no violations.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second, dismiss with no violation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, that concludes.
Sorry,
please, at least Dr. James, throw me a bone here and have him reimburse our fees. You recognize that it's not on here.
So the board has voted to find no violation. You'll receive confirmation of the board's action shortly. Okay. So. Finish the informals, just gonna sit.